Okay, well, I'm going to talk about nitrogen deposition, and we've already heard it's an important contributor to coastal eutrophication, Chesapeake Bay. And air, if we look at a number of different estuaries along the East Coast and the Gulf Coast, air accounts for 15 to 40% of the end loading to the estuaries. And you've already seen the numbers from Tom and Jeff. When you add them together, the ag part, they come up a little bit more than 30% coming to Chesapeake Bay. And most of that is indirect loading to the watershed itself and then percolating through the streams and rivers to the bay. So this just to confirm, fossil fuel combustion is involved in oxidized nitrogen deposition coming from stationary sources, cars and trucks. And we might want to move this to biofuels as well. So NO is what is being emitted. It goes through photochemistry that then is involved in ozone production. NO2 is an intermediate, and nitric acid is the main terminating product there. And that's what's depositing as oxidized nitrogen, by and large. Agricultural sources, we've talked about ammonia, and we have to be aware, and I'll give you an example of why in a moment, SO2 emissions coming up with sulfuric acid, because then ammonia wants to neutralize that and create fine particles, and then it also tries to neutralize nitric acid as an afterthought after neutralizing first the sulfuric acid. So the two main sources are reduced nitrogen and oxidized nitrogen we talk about. And if you look at these are model results in terms of the actual total oxidized nitrogen deposition around the Chesapeake Bay area, you can see the oxidized nitrogen car and urban influences here along the Boswash Corridor, and then the utility influences here along the Ohio River Valley. And then if we look at reduced nitrogen deposition, then the CAFOs come into play. So here's Lancaster County with dairy and poultry. There's the Delmarva Peninsula with poultry and Shenandoah with poultry and North Carolina with hogs. So they're coming up like with really bright spots there. We don't in this area really see a whole lot of reduced nitrogen coming from crops, because that's out here in Iowa, mostly in the Corn Belt that we talked about this morning. And so here it's really the animal operations, which nationally represent about 75% of the ammonia emissions anyway. So they're pretty important. So if we take it together and looking over the Chesapeake Bay watershed here area, here's the total oxidized nitrogen deposition, wet plus dry, coming from the model. Again, with the corridor, the Boswash Corridor, and then the Ohio River Valley here. The confined animal operations, and then we add them together, we see the confined animal operations are really still dominating the total. So these are hot spots that we want to kind of worry about and think about. So if we look at the nitrogen budget for 2001 coming from the atmospheric model, and the oxidized nitrogen, as I mentioned, nitric acid is the dominant form, but there are a lot of other forms of oxidized nitrogen that are depositing. And in general, dry deposition is greater than wet deposition. If we look at reduced nitrogen, then here, the dry is slightly smaller than wet. And at least historically, we've seen that the reduced nitrogen has been less than the oxidized nitrogen up to now. And that's something that's going to be changing. So we are actually going to be worrying more about reduced nitrogen deposition in the future than we are now. So that gets a sense of the budget averaged over or accumulated over the entire Chesapeake Bay watershed. We've developed airsheds for the Chesapeake Bay watershed to show that the area from which the emissions are coming that are responsible for a majority of the deposition to the watershed, about 75%, is a very large multi-state area. So you're not going to address the atmospheric contribution by just looking at the watershed. You're really going to have to go to a multi-state. And in general, we found we've been piggybacking on the national strategies, like the clean coming out of the Clean Air Act, that are aimed at human health effects. So we're getting a lot of secondary benefit in terms of in the ecological arena. Airshots don't have definitive boundaries, and so this is sort of an operational boundary, and it goes way out in terms of where all of that deposition is coming from. But this is an operational term that we can see, and so basically they're very large, and we have to take that into account when we want to address the deposition, which is that 30% part. There's a lot of uncertainty in what is the range of influence of ammonia emissions. Here we're looking at the hog farm hotspot in Sampson County and looking at its range. And the uncertainty is what we have in the models now is on this order. I think it's sort of out in here. And so the hog farms in North Carolina are infecting the Chesapeake Bay. It's not as strong as an effect as it is locally here, but they are affecting it. And that answer is going to change as we do some more advances in understanding and recognizing in the model that actually ammonia is deposited and goes bidirectionally. It can be emitted or deposited depending on the local conditions and the ammonia that are in the plant, stomata, and the aquaplast. So that could actually lengthen this, particularly in crop areas where there's fertilization. So we looked at the relative responsibility. So after looking at where is it coming from, then who's it coming from? For 1990 emissions, way back in those days, and here's the Chesapeake Bay watershed, and we can see that a good portion of that oxidized nitrogen is coming from utility plants, power plants, but it's all up in headwaters. And that the mobile sources are all down right along next to the bay and local there. So there's spatial differences, but they have about the same amount of relative contribution. But we've been really hammering on the utilities and the power plants in the name of ozone, actually, in the name of fine particles. So we're expecting when we go out to project out to 2020, that hotspot for the power plants is reducing way down into the teens. It's still over the headwaters, but it's much less than before, and the mobile sources are still up there in that 40% range along the Boston-Washington corridor. So that's still maintaining, and when we just link these together and look at the oxidized nitrogen, then 1990 versus 2020, we can see that the power plants averaged over their contribution to the Chesapeake Bay watershed have dropped from 40% to 17%, or expected to drop to that. Mobile sources are about the same. So industry and off-road construction and commercial have really picked up the slack here in terms of the total deposition is less, but the relative contribution and responsibility has shifted a little bit. Although mobile sources are still something to look at. And these projections take into account population growth and growth in vehicle miles traveled. So the control programs are working. So here's looking at what the control programs are sort of expected to do. These are the power plant numbers are actual measurements coming from the power plant starting in 1995. So we sort of know pretty well what those are doing. Mobile sources is a model, but we're expecting the total NOx of around 2001 to start really decreasing here dramatically and continuing on with the Clean Air Act rules, initially aimed at ozone for human health and now aimed at fine particles for human health, and also SO2 is going down. And after about 2015, it starts leveling off to 2020, and that's what we were using. Then in terms of ammonia, this is a glitch in the method change, so it's not real at all. So you have to move this line down. So basically, ammonia has been projected to steadily increase over time in the national inventory. we're not taking any management practices into account here. This is a case that we talked about this morning of looking backwards and projecting forwards. But that's what we've got in the model in terms of the ammonia being just steadily increasing in the area. And what I wanted to mention here is that, okay, ammonia is increasing, but the SO2 is decreasing. That's going to influence the dry deposition of the reduced nitrogen because it's going to change this partitioning. Gaseous ammonia and gaseous nitric acid deposit about 10 times more quickly than do the fine particles. So if you change this partitioning between the two, then you're going to affect the deposition, the actual deposition. So remember, we showed that the SO2 was decreasing. And so here we have a case of errors in the inventory. This is the 2010 inventory. Assume that in three counties here, the chicken operations went from 5 million birds down to nothing. I just don't believe that. So those are unreal, and we haven't had a change. So ignore that. Look down in here, and what we see is we started in 2010 with air regulations oriented towards ozone, and so NOx was being reduced, but nothing was being done to SO2. The 2010 controls are really, the Clean Air Interstate Rule, are really aimed at fine particles, and so SO2 is being reduced, as well as further reductions in NOx, taking the summer controls and extending them out through the entire year. What we see in looking from this plot to that plot is that this is reduced nitrogen. The reduced nitrogen deposition has gone up, although the emissions have not changed at all. So what's happening is that it's this partitioning between particulate ammonium and ammonia gas. As we reduce the sulfur, there's less ammonium than in terms of the neutralization. And we also reduce NOx, and so there's less of that around to be converted to particles. So we have more ammonia. It deposits so rapidly that actually the dry deposition increases, the air concentrations go down, and wet deposition actually decreases while the dry deposition increases. And we think that's a pretty reliable estimate that the model is coming up with. So if we look at the budget for Chesapeake Bay, here's 2001. And with the NOx tip call, we were getting a 28% reduction in oxidized nitrogen deposition. And when we go to 2010 CARE, the additional reduction, we get to a 38% reduction. And this is that important gap filling that Jeff sort of mentioned a little bit for Chesapeake Bay and coming up with the air reductions that are going to help out meeting the overall strategy goal. But if we look at the reduced nitrogen, then it's going up. And as I mentioned, the wet goes down slightly. So what happens, because the SO2 went down by about 25%, we actually double the increase in the reduced nitrogen total here, from a 4% growth. A negative reduction is a growth. So 4% growth to an 8% growth. And that ammonia growth and then the ammonia total amount really eats into the reduction that we get from the oxidized nitrogen. So instead of getting 38%, we get 21%. So that's going to make a difference. Because the Clean Air Interstate rules, which are really heavily oriented towards the utility sector and the mobile source national controls on tailpipe standards, really focus on the east. We expect the oxidized nitrogen deposition to go down, to be cut in half by 2020. And that's in the face of population growth and VMT growth. So that's a pretty significant reduction, but we expect the ammonia to go up. And so we get then a much reduced reduction, and it's also spotty, and there are holes in that reduction at where the confined animal operations are. So the oxidized nitrogen deposition reductions are severely mitigated by increases in total reduced nitrogen deposition. And as I mentioned, before alluded to, then the time trend in the proportions of oxidized nitrogen and reduced nitrogen is going to change. So where in 1990 it was two-thirds oxidized and one-third reduced, it's now progressing to where we expect by 2020 that the reduced nitrogen is kind of the major source of the contributing to the bay deposition of nitrogen. It just means that we're going to need to worry about the agricultural operations then in the future as we go, because we're making good progress on the oxidized nitrogen. For the bay surface, it makes an importance because, you know, ammonia, if you get more ammonia deposition, you'll put some different pressures on the trophic status, and you can actually move things to more harmful algal blooms. I don't think this is big enough to really affect that in terms of direct deposition to the bay, because it's pretty small. But anyway, that's something to be concerned about. So this is just a map of that ratio, oxidized to total N, to show that in 2001, it's up here, the sort of brownish is more than 70% of that in that area, the deposition in that area is coming from oxidized nitrogen. Here, the CAFOs, it's more like in the teens, in the 20s. Then in 2020, we expect it to come down to not 70s, but into the 40s. And in the CAFOs, it'll be in the teens and the aughts. From those concentrated areas. So in summary, the ammonia deposition is important, and it's dominant around the intense agricultural operation. The range of influence of ammonia is much larger than conventional wisdom. People think it goes up and comes right back down, but actually the majority of it goes up. That's volatilized from the animal operations and from fertilizer application. It goes up and is involved in long-range transport. Dry deposition is less than wet, but we expect this to reverse in the future. We expect oxidized nitrogen deposition to decrease significantly because of the Clean Air Act actions relative to human health impacts, and that by 2020, reduced N is expected to comprise the majority of nitrogen deposition in the Chesapeake Bay watershed. Future work that we're working on in the model is to put bidirectional exchange of ammonia in. That's going to really change the deposition patterns over agricultural areas, where it won't change it so much over the natural vegetation, but it will change it over crops. And we're not exactly sure which way it goes, but it potentially means those crop areas are going to have a bigger influence on long-range transport. So I think that was it. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much.